Well, good afternoon again. Hope you enjoyed your workshops. It's always enjoyable to go to workshops and watch people demonstrate and show us how it's done. Of the subjects that I have been assigned this weekend, this one is probably the one that I am the least comfortable with, really. And I think that that's because I feel myself behind the curve, really. Oh, you know, I have computers and I have internet connections and I have a cell phone that I like to not wear and a few things like that. But still, from what I can tell as I look around me, I'm just not quite there. I was comparing notes with Brian Swartz over lunch. And he was lamenting the student he has who cannot type, but he can text message in his pocket. I just shake my head. I know I'm behind the curve. Somewhere along the line, I just haven't kept up with the technology or the communication revolution. Nevertheless, we'll talk here a little bit. And I thought we would begin this afternoon by being just a bit interactive. I have a couple questions for you, just to kind of start off. And I really would like a response here. So kind of listen to them. I'm going to read three questions and come back to the first one then. First one is, from your perspective, whether it's in the classroom or personal, how has the communication revolution impacted your life in positive ways? Okay, so what I'm wanting is some responses. Look, how's your life better? What are the positive ways in which the communication revolution has affected you? Second question is obvious. How has it impacted your life negatively? And kind of like to know sort of from the first three. And the third question is, if you had the power, the magical power to change any one thing about the communication revolution, what would you change? I did actually have a fourth one here. What would you plan for the future? If you could invent a new piece yet that would make it even better, what would you invent? All right. Like to have a few responses here. So how has the communication revolution affected your life in a positive way or ways? Who would like to respond to that? Lucy saying that she feels far more connected with people in her community than she had previously. Good. Who else? Talk about that just a little.
The ones from our church.
Yes, okay, I've got you. So you stay a lot more closely connected with what they're doing, whether it's Costa Rica or Africa or wherever. Yeah, good. In fact, I would echo that one. The one I was going to give is exactly that. I can sit down and Skype the team in Poland. It's almost free. There you go. Another example of how you can just connect real quickly with people from far away. Okay, good. Who else? Yes. Praise the Lord, Steve. Anybody who has tried that, does it always work? It's not infallible. All right. Yeah, that's good. That's what do they call that system? I guess it's the same one you're using, Gerald. What's it?
Message notification.
There you go. Go ahead, Sharon. How many of you know anything about that old system? There you go. When you were typing with those manual typewriters, at least that's the way I did it early on the carbon copied whatchamacallits, and you made them as... I bet you we're more accurate than that gang that does it nowadays, because it had to be right. If it wasn't, you were in there scratching with a razor blade or something to get it to work. How many of you have the foggiest idea of what we're talking about? I see some hands here. That's good. I remember when James Landis came to faith Anchor Christian School where I taught, they were trying to recruit him. And he said, there is one thing that must be. We must have a duplicator if we're going to do that. If we're going to use the old system, I'm not coming. They got a new one. All right, who else? John, you were going to say something here, I believe. There you go. So using texting to cover ground faster than you would otherwise. Good. All right, who else? How's your life better? What are the positive influences of the communication revolution? Kevin. So you can get information that you used to, it was just beyond you. You couldn't get it. Good. There you go. I saw another hand waving. Yep, Randall. Okay, Randall, right in behind you then. Wow. Wow. Let me try to get one up on him. You know, a neat thing I do, since Ryan Zilk helped me to VPN into my computer here at school, now then I let something here on my computer that I need at home. So I just sit down at home, VPN in, pull out the document, and email it to myself. And it's really slick, I'm telling you. Hats off to that system. And Ryan Zook, he's not here. I'd have him stand up and clap for him. Who else? Okay, Enos. Incredible. Oh, my. All right. Let's take a little time. I hope it's shorter. What's negative? How's your life not quite as good? Paul. Aha. You're always available. Privacy and solitude is tougher and tougher to sort of get. All right. Patrick. Yeah, boy, you know, the Facebook thing or whatever. Okay, so it's like once you push send, it's send, right? It's out there. John. Yeah, you're actually spending more time than what it's worth. Yeah, that can happen because of how easy it is. Regina. So it's backed us, or maybe, yeah, pulled us into a position of being impatient. Things ought to happen just now. Yeah, I was just thinking the other day, I just upgraded my system and I got a little faster service at home because they talked me into it for a dollar or two, you know, whatever it was. And I thought, you know, when I first started using my, we sat there for 5 minutes. That thing just kind of churned and chugged and went on. And by now, if it's not there right now, I need faster service. Something's got to change here. Yeah. Okay, so patience has gone downhill. Kevin, there you go. Wow. My mother-in-law, she just begs Sheila to send her a handwritten letter, a handwritten thank you note. Says, don't send me one of those typed ones. Don't send any of that. I want a handwritten one. There's something refreshing about that. Okay, that's good. Steve, I think I saw your hand. Oh, okay. Somebody else here. Yes. Or VPN in. Irresponsibility kind of encouraged here. You can forget and still cover the ground. I hear what you're saying. Yes, back there, I think. All right, there's more clandestine activity that can go on. That's interesting. Listening to a mom talk there just a little bit. Anybody else? Enos. Okay, I got it, Enos. I got that one. That's good. That's good. All right, let's jump to the third one. If you could change something, what would you change? No takers here? No inventors? Crash the entire system. Okay, well, think about it as we go along here. Maybe in your groups, you can raise that question again. And really, seriously on the question, I would wonder, what could we think about constructively changing? In some ways, the few remarks that I have to share here are an attempt at saying, well, here's some constructive things that we could think about. Maybe in relationship to the communication revolution. You know, there's a word that I would just like to begin with that I think for myself has been a real challenge. It's the word habit. Stephen Covey writes a number of books about the seven habits, right? Seven habits of this and the seven habits of that. And probably, in my opinion, one of the most striking paragraphs he has, and I forget which one of the books is, he says, you know, look, I've been all over the country teaching all over the world, teaching about the seven habits of this and the seven habits of that. And he said, here's the problem. Lots of people know what good habits ought to be. They can tell you what they are. But the bridge between sort of being able to quote the seven habits of highly successful people and actually having those habits in one's life is a bridge, he said, that very, very few people actually cross. And I remember reading that saying, you know, Melvin, that's so true. It's so true of you. In many ways, what we're going to be talking about here today is not ways to destroy a communication revolution, but talking about our habits. What are they? And what are the habits that we want to our students to have? And how can we go about somehow actually crossing the bridge, actually moving across it so that we're not just talking about the kinds of habits that we ought to have, but the kind of habits that actually exist? In many ways, I'd like for you to think about what we're talking about within that context. Somehow I got two titles mixed up here, and you'll see that. I started out with the one interaction with and responding to the information age, and realized here just this morning that it's actually responding to the communication revolution. I got that changed in time here on the machinery so that you at least saw the right title to begin with. But where we're headed here, I think, is pretty much the same place. I would say that on this thing with interacting with the communication revolution, the information age, I want to underscore a second word. First, my first word is habit. Second word is example. Okay? If there's anything that a teacher ought to be doing, it is by example demonstrating how you interact with all of this. And of course, I would say that to a parent as well. After all, when sons grow up and they get to a certain age, they do kind of, they're attracted to dad's habits. Maybe more than what they were when they were younger. And so I just point out to you that I think example is very important. So what I'm going to do is share about 10 points here or so that I have found, I think, to be profitable for me. First of all, recognize the day of opportunity. I'm not here to decry the communication revolution. I'm not here to bring such a negativity to bear upon it that we feel guilty using it. The truth of the matter is, it really is a day of opportunity like no generation has ever seen. We've heard a few of the testimonies here about how the communication revolution has really, really benefited us, our missions and beyond. And so I'd like to just begin there and say, look, let's do see it as a time in history where we have fantastic opportunity to grab a hold of a privilege that we have and use it powerfully, rather than drown in it. And a few things along the way that have helped me to think of it in that way. Consider being task-oriented. Now, my schedule, I guess, has forced me into this. But I do not view the equipment that is around me as toys. I really don't. I don't have time for them to be toys. Not bragging or complaining there, just saying I don't. However, when I recognize that here is a tool that actually will save me time, it really will get me somewhere, and I could explain it to you if I have the right habits toward it. The fact of the matter is, it would be a great benefit. And almost in every case, when I have taken the dive to actually learn a new piece of the communication revolution, it has almost always been because I can connect it with a task that I'm wanting to do or have been doing for years and am wanting to find a faster way to do it. I already have enough wants and desires and all that kind of stuff. I don't see any point in just fiddling around with stuff to figure out some new thing to do if it really, there's no need for it anyway. Now, none of us do this perfectly, and I'm not saying I do. I'm just pointing out to you that the volume of everything that is out there is so large that it's endless. You can just play with this stuff forever and ever and ever. And I'd like to just encourage us to pull back from that and ask ourselves, what's my mission in life? What's my work? What do I need to do? How can this stuff, how can this communication revolution help me to accomplish that task? And if it is helpful to me, then learn it and learn it right as well as you can. I'll just give you an example or two here. I know this is not exactly on the communication revolution, but it's sort of tied into those things. You take Microsoft Excel, okay? The moment I realized how powerful of a tool that was, I said to myself, I'm going to master that thing. The fact of the matter is that is so useful in so many places that I'm going to learn how to do that and do it well. Now, there are people here who could run circles around me, but you know what? It does an awful lot of stuff for me. Microsoft Word, similarly. In fact, I would encourage you, I don't really have favorites with programs and all that kind of stuff, but what I have discovered is if you will take one of them, that they're kind of in the center of things, people use them regularly, and master that one instead of trying to master them all. If you can do a couple of the things really well, and you really know those like the back of your hand, they'll serve you. But if you're trying to learn it all, it's too big. For example, I don't fix my computer anymore. In the early days, my earliest computer was a Commodore, I believe. It was a piece of junk. That thing, I couldn't get it to do what I wanted to do. But if it needed to be fixed, there was, you either had to send it away or you, I know you still do that too, I know, but I didn't, whatever happened to that thing, I did. And Sheila can tell you the hours I spent messing with that one. And then a TND 1000 EX, I believe. I messed with one of those for a long time. But I used it. I used that thing for 10 years, I believe. And it was very, very powerful tool in my hands. I'll tell you what I do nowadays. When that stuff doesn't work, I'm way behind the curve. If it doesn't work, I call Craig or I call Ryan or I call somebody that knows what they're doing. I say, fix this. Bang. Now the point is I'm not going to take the time. I don't have the time with what I'm doing to actually learn the skill of computer science, all the stuff that keeps those things running. Somebody else does. But what am I doing? What are my tasks? What are my responsibilities? And when I know what they are, then buy into the skills and the communication things and so on that are helpful. Now, I know I'm a little bit off the subject here, but for whatever it's worth, consider being task-oriented. Train yourself and your students in four areas. Number one, to prioritize. In my opinion, a large part of doing the will of God in life is to set appropriate priorities in one's life. Because after all, even if you exclude those things that the Lord Jesus said don't do, and just talk about the things that he said do, it's still true that out of that list of things, one ought to make some discernment about what is the most important, what is at the top of the list, and what's second and what's third. Maybe you're like me. I've created a list already. I'm not really a list person. But you know, if I start creating a list of all of the things that really I should be doing today, and I say should, that thing gets incredibly long. And after it gets incredibly long, I just kind of give up on it. And I just kind of go shoot from the hip and go from one thing to the next trying to get them done. And that's a ridiculous way to live. It really is. It's far better to look at that list and say, look, what are the three things that are the most important here? And in some ways, it seems to me as though that's the way it is with this communication revolution. What is it that's important? What is it that's useful? Now, in terms of information itself, train yourself and your students to select reputable information. We're shifting here just a little bit talking about the information age because I was a bit focused on that as I prepared. We already mentioned there's an incredible amount of information out there. And you start in with a search engine and you get, you know, not more than 5 years ago, if you did a search on something, at least it seems like it to me, you'd end up with maybe one or two pages to look at. Now it's 15 or 20. Yeah, as soon as it hits that thing, pow, there's that whole string down below. Where are you going to walk through all of those and actually try to find it? You know, it seems to me as though there is some training to be done here so that you can help a student to sit down at a computer, and if they're looking for information, specific information, help them to know how to find that specifically and not waste ridiculous amounts of time just delving through stuff that's not, it's not even relevant to what they're talking about. And of course, I don't have, that's beyond the scope of this discussion to go into how you do that, but it's really worth your time to help students with it. Train yourself and your students toward efficiency. I've already spoken some to that. Toward efficiency. And I think this reflects a little bit of what some of you were saying, for example. Is it you, Paul, who said you can't get away from the thing? It's kind of taken away privacy. Well, you know, I've read some information on this. Some forms of efficiency would be like check your email at regular times of the day, not every time you sit down at your desk. Okay? If you're like me, if you sit down at your desk and you check email, there are going to be two or three. And you might think to yourself, two or three you feel like you need to respond to. And you might feel to yourself, well, look, I have the machinery and it requires a quick response. The responsible thing to do here is to actually check it every time I sit down and respond and all of that. Well, think about that. They didn't used to do that. It used to be impossible to respond like that. I think if you're overwhelmed with emails, I would strongly suggest that you actually consider, okay, I'll check it before lunch or after lunch, check it in the morning, after lunch, and before I leave for home or some arrangement like that. I have found that to be helpful. So train yourself and your students toward efficiency. Now, this is probably a pet peeve of mine, I know. Train yourself and your students to shun images in favor of text. Images are good. I often give the example of Jan Amos Comenius, who way back there, a long time ago, wrote the book Pictus Orbitus, and it was the first student text to have pictures in it. Images to help students to learn. And I think we all appreciate images, so I'm not trying to discount that by any means. And I know this is a whole subject in itself, but I'm on the side of those who are wary, are concerned about the move toward the seeming movement toward an image-based education, an image-based world, rather than a text-based. Now, that's probably deconstructionistic in that I'm choosing examples and that's my bias that I'm bringing toward it and all of that that goes along with it. I agree with that. I understand it. But I do honestly wonder if we're not headed in a direction in terms of images affecting and influencing our world in ways that are just incredibly, I want to say moving, and I think maybe... And maybe in a negative sense, the media can really control this. a picture of a bloodied up child laying there with the mouth wide open and eyes turned up. And so it says way, way, way more. And has far more innuendo in it than a story that gives the context of what this was about and so forth and so on. So I just suggest this, not saying that I'm dead right on it. 4, practice solitude and meditation. From what I can tell, you can fill your life entirely full of some form of communication in our day. That's what it seems like to me. Well, there is a thing called talking with yourself. And it's not just crazy people who do that. I think it happens to be wise people who talk to themselves. They do actually have enough solitude and do enough meditating to look inwardly and reflect on what's really happening and what I'm thinking and analyzing my thoughts and considering them and coming to conclusions and so on. So look, in the middle of the communication revolution, don't forget to talk to yourself. Okay, that takes some solitude and meditation. Now, you might be among the crazy guys if you're on your phone talking to yourself. Thank you. I think you understand. But I really do urge you to do this. 5, be accountable and ask for accountability. That's a bit redundant, I realize. But I added on and ask for accountability just simply because it seems to me in the world that we live in, it's good just to kind of have people you talk to about your habits and what you're actually doing with them. See, it concerns me a little bit that what we do is we shift into high gear when we find out that somebody is into pornography. Okay? And it is time to get into high gear. But I have some questions. How is it that that all became so available? Why were the habits developed along that line? Is it really good to have computers in places where that kind of communication can happen so easily without there being some kind of accountability connected with it? We just have a rule at home. We have a wireless connection at home so the boys can use their laptop, but our rule is that you can come down to the kitchen table and connect. And it's not just, here's the point, it's not just because of the issue of pornography. It's the issue we see each other's habits. Okay, we see what we're doing. So if one of my sons is in the bedroom and is on that computer and connected until 1 o'clock in the morning, of course, there are ways to check up on that and all that, I know so. But I don't know, it just builds something into good habit. The life of a good habit, yeah, a life built on good habits, if you have the kinds of things that you don't even label them preventive, but they are preventive. You understand. So I think what startles me a little bit is we tend to address the issues that are, there are issues that are beyond the issues. They're ones that are really big, and we're not paying attention to the smaller ones that really are what build into this. And that's why I tuck this in here. Be accountable and ask for some accountability, kind of just in the average daily ways in which you use a computer or you use the communication system, the cell phone. And quite frankly, I don't really quite understand why parents buy. This is a little off track, but I have to now and then just spill my guts, right? Why parents would buy their 10, 11, 12, 13, 14-year-old or cell phones, or even a little older, pay for them, pay for the communication, do all of that. Erickson's sitting over there. You can ask him if I'm going to do that. Look, first of all, I'm not even at all certain it's a good habit. Well, I don't think it is a good habit. I don't think it's habitually good for families if everybody in the family has a cell phone. And maybe you disagree very much with that, but I don't. I would urge us to think about this a little bit. Be accountable and ask for accountability. If you have a teenager, 13 years old, they're talking to whoever all over the place on cell phones, as the mom back here said, she doesn't quite know what's going on. I mean, who are they calling? What are they talking about? Again, it just feels better to me when the communication within the family and the accountable relationships, you hear each other talking to other people. Even for myself, I keep my computer, I don't have just a private office at home. My computer is the family computer. So my wife uses it, my boys use it, I use it. And it just keeps us all honest, keeps us all a certain amount of accountability. We're not hollering at each other and saying, hey, what are you doing, blah, blah. But we are, you know, for example, my youngest son is not here. He's a Phillies fan. Yeah, I guess they're, I don't know, somewhere on the march towards something right now. I'm not quite sure what the story is, but every time I walk into my office in the morning, he traipses down the steps and back to the computer, and he's back there, and he's checking on whatever happened to the Phillies, I guess, last night. All right. Here's what I mean by accountability. I do not go in there and scold him and tell him, now listen, you get off that thing right now. I'm going to shut it down. I'm going to block that. I just go in and I say to him, so how'd the Phillies do? So he might say a word or two. And I say, you know, I wonder if, how much time have you been working on this thing? You ask just a few questions, just probe. Don't tell him you may not do this. Just try to hold him accountable. Is it really a good habit? And this is not the way I say it to him. I find ways of just asking him questions. Okay? Is this a good habit to have in your life to spend this much time? And this is the first thing you do regularly in the morning is check to see how the Phillies are doing. All right, enough of that little pet peeve too. Number six. Whoops, I missed one there. I'm sorry. That was five. Six, develop a benchmark mentality. Now, this is somewhat in the face of postmodernism in general. Benchmarks are standards. Benchmarks are something from which you measure things. You have a capacity to tell. That's in line. That's on the mark. It's a measuring stick. It's principled. So I just suggest develop a benchmark mentality. In schools in particular, number seven here, watch for copy and paste plagiarism. And I know this is, again, a little bit more focused on the information idea. I guess we all find that really handy to do, and as long as it's cited that way, that's fine. But it's awful easy just to get into stuff now, copy and paste, copy and paste, copy and paste, copy and paste, and put a few sentences in between, somehow pull it together, and it looks like you really did something fantastic when it really wasn't much at all, to tell you the truth. Back to communication. Value personal interview methods of gaining information. I was blessed here the other day when Erickson came and said, say, could you contact Jan Wieterzowski in Poland and ask him if I could do a personal interview, probably by phone or in some other fashion, about his role or his participation in the Warsaw Uprising. Okay? He's doing a research paper. Well, here's what blessed me about that. That personal connection, that actual getting information from people. This was cited here. Somebody commented on it, that one of the negatives of the communication revolution has been that perhaps there is not enough actual personal interaction, where we see a face, we hear a voice, we see the expression on the face, and so on. I somehow we can't let that go by the wayside while we're doing all of our communicating. It seems to me as though it still is good to get into my vehicle and drive down the road 10 miles and visit my neighbor and talk to them and sit in the living room. Here again, those of us who are a little older, we get off on a lament here. that the way it used to be on a Sunday afternoon, what did you do? Well, you know, after church, We go someplace and have a meal and sit there and talk, and the youngsters would go outside and play, and we built dams on the stream, and we got soaking wet and got spankings for it and things like that. But there was real personal interaction as a result of all of that. Just across the board. Sinking in here slowly. They're getting the point. Yeah, and on a serious note, it just feels to me like that's a totally different world than if on Sunday afternoon I'm texting or I'm even emailing. My life is just full of that. Okay? Now, you already heard me say that I'm not wanting to get rid of all of that, but I just wonder how much loss really is happening where we have missed or we've bypassed perhaps the personal touch that really ought to be, that makes us human and makes us experience something that I don't think you can experience any other way. So I would like to say develop the habit of I'm calling a personal interview here, personal interaction, and take the time and the energy to do this. Don't let the communication revolution cause you to bypass this. Be opinion of mine, at least. And number 9, this is back to the information age. It occurred to me just the other day that one of my favorite things to do when I go to visit people is to walk up to their bookshelves and to look at their personal library. How many of you do that? Doesn't it tell you volumes about the person? I hope you like my play on words here. Well, my point is very simple. I love my personal library, and I love personal libraries, and I sure would hate to see them disappear. I really would. Yeah, there's something about, you know, that book that you pull off the shelf and you even know right where the page is almost and sort of can almost turn to it without even, well, now it would just seem to me to be a sorry thing if that all just disappears in the communication age, in the electronic age. Maybe another generation could learn how to, I don't know, mouse around until they found it or something. But for me, that books are kind of like personal friends, you know. I've lost a book, so I gave it to somebody, and they never gave it back. And you can ask Sheila, I'm still bellyaching about that thing. I can't get that book back. I just strongly urge you, in the information age, in a communication revolution age, these are the kinds of habits, one underscore habit, where one buys a book, it's a good book, he puts it on a shelf, it's a friend to him, he loans it out, he gets it back, and it tells something about who he is. Really, really, really encourage that for you. And lastly, don't pay too much for what you get. Okay? This reflects a little bit on what I have been saying here all along, and whether you're talking efficiency or prioritization, or whatever it is, I'm amazed at what people will pay. And I'm not, of course, just talking about dollars and cents. I'm talking, you pay other things out when you make decisions or you develop habits of life. And I think maybe this would be a little concern here. I feel like I've gotten a little bit maybe negative here toward the end, but just for whatever it's worth, it seems to me as though we're putting out a lot of money and a lot of time. We spent a lot of personal energy, personal capital, so to speak, on a communication revolution that maybe has not gotten us nearly as far as we thought it would to begin with. Now, I already began by saying that there are many, many very powerful things about this great day of opportunity. My question is, how much are we willing to pay for it? And I really just let you with that question. Sometimes sit down if you are going to buy a new piece of equipment. I have a cell phone. I just got one. I don't know what, 6 months ago, a year ago now, I guess. Maybe. But I remember sitting down and trying to ask myself the questions. Well, what are you going to pay for this? And in the end, decided to go ahead and get a cell phone. I would urge you to do that little exercise, and maybe sometime in your classroom, just have your students sit down and think of, particularly high school students, what would you pay for this? How much will it cost you, really, in the long run? We have a few minutes, so I thought maybe what I think I'll do is just stop there and see. Okay, what would you like to say after my 10 points? Would you like to add? What would you like to challenge? What would you like to balance off? Thanks, Crystal. You know, I stayed off of that. That was another of my pet peeves, really, is Facebook, Zanga sites, this type of thing. I'm amazed at what actually gets communicated there. Now, I will admit something. It's a very helpful reference point for pastors. just for whatever it's worth, it really is kind of that way. But it also, I'm amazed at the images that are presented there, and particularly if you know the person well, and compare it with what is, particularly if Sam Jones puts that up there, and somebody who doesn't know him at all would look at that and then ask yourself the question, what would they see when they see that? And it kind of goes back to, I believe, what Patrick said too, and that is, look, I mean, what you put out there, and it becomes, it's there for public consumption, so to speak. You're not going to pull it back, and who knows what in the world becomes of it. So I'd have a little concern too, just exactly how all that public forum works. There has to be some real strong possibilities there where people from different parts of the country can interact on very important issues. And here again, I'm all for that. I don't have any issues there at all. Can we teach? Can we learn the good habits ourselves and have our students learn them too, I think, maybe is the point here, whether it's Facebook, Zanga sites, blogs, or whatever. Good. Okay, who else? Randall. That's an interesting observation. Anybody want to respond to that? So if you have a finite amount of emotional, relational energy or whatever, and you spread it so thin over a whole pile of people, maybe you lose depth. Any comments? I would tend to agree, without knowing for sure. All right, I think that's enough for now. You can go ahead and take some of this discussion here, take it to your groups, and talk these things over. I do want to be sure that you know that I don't consider myself a perfect example or knowing all the answers here. I just hope that as communities, we really can wrestle well with the communication revolution. Turn it back to Gerald.
This recording and many others are available through Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders Educational Programs. Order online at www.christianlearning.org or call 877-222-4769.